Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Webtoon Wednesday episode, and today we're going to be talking about a relatively recent series. I think there are 16 episodes out. It's called Brimstone and Roses, and I have the creator, May Rothschild, with me. May, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Really happy to do this.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this trip so far. It's a lot of fun, even though it's kind of dealing with some heavier topics, maybe has a little darkness to it with demons and supernatural and such. But we'll get into all that in just a minute. But I always like to ask creators when they come on for the first time sort of about their background with comics. You know, did they grow up reading them as a child? And then sort of their transition to becoming a creator. Did you go to school for that? Creative field, something you're always interested in, and then maybe any previous work that you've done before. So we'll start with your history with comics. Did you grow up reading them? Were they a part of your childhood?
Yeah, so funny story. I actually am not a huge fan of comics. Really? I'm much more into animation and whatnot, so it's pretty wild that I'm now a comic artist professionally. I actually got into comics because whenever I went to college, I went to SCAD and I wanted to go into storyboarding, and I was originally in animation. And I was just like, is this actually the best major, or is there like another one? I've heard of the sequential department. And they were just like, oh, if you want to do storyboarding, you have to go to sequential. So I ended up swapping majors, and sequential art is the study of comics, essentially. So I started doing a bunch of comics then, and then I started to realize that, you know, not all comics are about superheroes and like that kind of, you know, traditional Western stuff. And yeah, I still focus heavily more on like on storyboarding rather than comics. But, you know, I did a bit of comics whenever I was quite, especially in my foundations classes.
So you thought that eventually you'd have a career in animation? Was that originally your thought? Or at what point did you start thinking, well, you know, obviously movies, storyboarding, it's all story.
This will sound sad, but whenever I was in high school, I didn't know what I wanted to do post, you know, graduation, and art was just the most obvious and simplest choice. And so I did research into just every single artistic field, you know, just like whatever, anything, please. And storyboarding seemed to be the most active industry and like the one that was constantly, you know, looking for, you know, storyboard artists and for workers and stuff. And I've always liked animation, and I've done a few little like crappy animatics in my past. And I was like, you know what? Why not? You know, what else can I do?
So art was probably always a big love for you then. And it sounds like you were sort of just searching for a way to have a career that involved it in some way. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And like I play a lot of video games. And so I was constantly just like roaming around those, and I considered maybe being like a game artist or something. And I was just like, wow, I really don't know how to 3D model either. So I guess the simplest thing was just animation. My style's not exactly the most like animation friendly, but you know, always time to learn.
Yeah, and are you still kind of pursuing that as a career, animation and storyboarding?
I mean, I definitely like to go into it. Maybe like after I finish working in comics, but the thing is, the industry is, I'm a little bit worried about bringing the industry just because right now my portfolio doesn't have too much storyboarding in it. And so whenever I was in college, I did a lot of storyboarding projects, but none of them I felt really strongly about. So they don't really reflect a great display of my, you know, abilities. So I have to just completely rehaul my entire portfolio before I even like consider trying to move into that industry, I think.
Gotcha. Well, Brimstone and Roses is obviously why we're here to talk about. But is there any other work that you've had published, either traditionally or digitally, that we could be on the lookout for? Or is this your first project?
This is my first project. It's very exciting. I've had a couple of like not super serious projects that I did in middle school and high school. Both were also webcomics. The first one was called Wheat Bread, and I published it on Smack Jeeves originally. I think I only got like 4 pages in, and then I dropped the project. It was just like, there's all these like epic scope, you know, storylines, and I was just like, wow, I don't have time.
Yeah.
And this entire story is a mess. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's transition here and talk a little bit about Brimstone and Roses specifically. Why don't you give our listeners an idea of what the story is about?
Yeah. So Brimstone and Roses is about a girl, B. She ends up summoning a demon to make her ex jealous. And because she's kind of in a rush whenever she's making this contract, a loophole gets through, and she essentially is now saddled with this crappy demon until she can fulfill the contract and make him leave.
Yeah, and it's exactly as crazy as it sounds, everybody. Obviously, you mentioned B, the demon Lazarus, or Bradley, as his kind of earthbound name is. Give us a rundown of some of the other main characters who are going to be an important part of the story.
Yeah, so there's like a handful of supporting characters right now. They haven't been super well elaborated on. But so I guess I'll start with B's ex, and she's the one that I just mentioned first. Her name is Ava. She and her new girlfriend, Elaine, they probably won't show up until way, way later in the series. But essentially, they had been dating since about like middle school. They've been lifelong friends. And obviously, B's sister, Sophia, invited her to the wedding, which B claimed to be okay with. And it was not okay. It was something where you don't want to make it weird because you understand, like, you know, lifelong friends, it's been a year. I should be okay with it, but I'm not okay. So I'm just going to suck it up and I'm going to try to be okay. And then it just ended up snowballing into a bigger mess. And so Ava is completely oblivious to, like, this, I guess, pain on B's end. And so whenever they meet up at the wedding, she's just completely like in that honeymoon phase with her new girlfriend and everything's all great. And then B's sister, Sophia, is her older sister. She will definitely be a more important character in the story once she gets back from her honeymoon, because she just left B to kind of pick up the shards of her sanity by herself. That's because, you know, it's her wedding. Why would she have to worry about her sister's mistakes? But I'm trying to think of a good way to explain her. She's the caring older sister, but at the end of the day, she's still the older sibling. And there's just a sort of exasperation whenever you look at the mess that your younger sibling has made.
Yeah, that's a good way.
And then trying to help you to get to fix it, you know?
Yeah, kind of like, oh no, not again. Like, haven't you learned your lesson yet?
Yeah. It's like, damn, this is the second time, B. Come on. Like, yeah. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Tough love.
It's tough love, exactly. Yeah, so she'll be coming back fairly soon, actually. I just wrapped up the mid-season finale. So she'll hopefully be making an appearance pretty soon in the comic. Then the character that was introduced semi-recently in the series, her name is Amira. I'm trying to remember what just happened in the series so that I don't accidentally spoil chunks of it.
Yeah, so they just went to the street fair.
Right, yeah, yeah. So Amira is just like a very calm and relaxed character. She was actually first mentioned in the second episode. She's the bartender at Sophia's wedding. And currently her character is really just like, you know, I'm here. I don't really know what's happening. You seem nice. You're very pretty. So I guess I'm going to ignore all this weird shit that's happening. But what the flip? Just like low key, what the hell is happening? So she's also going to be a pretty important character, but probably not in the way some people are thinking as of how the story is going right now.
Gotcha. Now,
yeah.
What made you decide? I mean, it's something we can all relate to, right? Like, you know, you break up and you still have feelings for the other person. It's a pretty universal thing. You know, we've all had bad breakups. We can all relate. But what made you want to explore this as the kind of the main theme for a webtoon strip?
Brimstone and Roses' original concept was actually something I made for a class project. I made three hooks, and Brimstone and Roses original one was the most popular. And it was more, despite the fact that the story does circulate around her getting over her ex, the story also is just supposed to touch on just, you know, starting to move on from the past and like becoming an adult and separating yourself from your childhood and just starting to like better yourself before you start focusing on other things. It's a little bit more vague than I guess the original premise is set up to be. But I swear it gets deeper. I swear it gets deeper from its simple roots.
Yeah, the other thing I found really interesting, like right from the start, it's clear that gender roles, the story doesn't follow traditional gender roles. It's not like it's this thing where B is bi and it's a big thing and, you know, a big production and you're trying to make some kind of political statement. You mentioned her sister, you know, Elaine, obviously getting married to another female. Again, it's not a thing. We've moved past that. So was that something that was always planned originally when you planned out the story? I mean, it's very modern in that way, but I think for some readers, it may come as a little bit of a surprise that you kind of don't make a big thing of it, if you will.
Yeah, it's always something that, you know, I've planned and wanted to make. I would like to make characters I can relate to. I'm a woman of color and I'm bi as well. And I have a sister who is also bi. So being able to make these characters and finally have this platform to like, show representation to maybe groups that don't normally get shown in the media. It's nice. It's nice to make characters that I can relate to and ones that I know my family and my friends and, you know, other people online can like see themselves in.
Yeah. But I love the fact that it's presented and it's not a statement. It's not the point of the story. It's just, this is a story. It is about people that you can relate to in real ways, you know, relationships and that whole thing that we talked about. And they also happen to be bisexual. It's not a big thing. So I appreciated that aspect of the story. It kind of grabbed. I think the first time I noticed was when the B actually gets to the wedding with Bradley and she says, oh, my sister. And then you'll meet her wife later. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, she's marrying a woman. Cool. You know, I just love that you didn't make you're not trying to make a statement. It's not the point of the story, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, thank you. Whenever I first made the hook and whatnot, I just wrote out the story. I literally just put character A or like B's sister or B's spouse. I mean, B's sister's spouse. Like, just, it was all just placeholder names. And then I was just like, And then I just kind of, you know, I took some characters that I already had and then I just like, put them in there because, you know, why not? Feels good to give a little bit of representation to those groups that need it.
Yeah, and have you had a good reaction from the community with that aspect of the story?
It's been mostly positive. I have had a few. I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this in like a delicate way. I've had a few comments that are kind of messed up, quite frankly, but other than that, it's mostly been really good comments. People are just like, wow, I'm really glad I can see a character that, you know, represents me. Or like people just been like, I'm so glad that people, you know, as you were saying, you know, I'm so glad that in this universe it's not a big deal, or that like, you know, characters of color exist, plus size characters exist, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's been nice.
It's refreshing because it does feel, like you said, a lot more representative and also realistic. You know, that's the thing about, you read a superhero comic, and don't get me wrong, I grew up on superhero comics and I still love them to this day, but I don't read a Superman comic and expect to see somebody who looks like me, you know. And if they are just some, you know, standard character, I could work out 24/7. I'm never going to be as buff as Superman. It doesn't work that way, you know.
That's fair. What's your favorite superhero comic, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, Superman is my favorite character, but I have to admit to not being a big fan of what's going on in his book right now. So I'd probably say the book I'm enjoying the most superhero-wise these days is actually Hawkman.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I know the writer who does Hawkman, and he's been doing some really good work on kind of reconciling. I don't know how familiar you are with Hawkman, but his...
I'm not too familiar. I know my sister's a fan of him. My sister reads a lot of comics.
Hawkman is one of those characters who has one of the most unbelievably convoluted histories because they've changed so many things about him over the years. It just doesn't make sense and logical sense when you look at it on paper. But the writer that's working on it now, Robert Venditti, has managed to reconcile a lot of the stuff. So really been enjoying that. So
that's good. Just do like a Hawkman multiverse.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, man. Into the Spider-Verse is so good. Sorry, I just randomly thought of that.
Yes, that was a great book as well. I'm enjoying the Miles Morales Spider-Man book right now as well.
It's so good.
Yeah, speaking of diversity, Saladin Abed, I think it's a great choice for that, being that he's of Middle Eastern descent and he lives in New York. He brings a lot to it, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So getting
beautiful
back to Brimstone and Roses.
Too.
We've strayed here. Where were we? Oh, I know what else I wanted to ask. We mentioned the demon.
Yes.
Lazarus, or Bradley, as he's known on Earth, brings a supernatural aspect to the story. So two things I'd like to know about that. What made you decide to bring that in as sort of B's big obstacle she has to overcome? It could have gone a lot of ways. Could have just focused on, her trying to get over the relationship. But you brought in that supernatural aspect. So I'm curious about that and if you did any research regarding that or if you're just winging it. And then the other thing that was really interesting, and this kind of goes back to the same way it is with the gender roles, how it's not a thing. When B told her sister, hey, I did this dumb thing, I summoned this demon, for B's sister not to believe her. But she's like, it's not that she doesn't believe her because, I don't believe in demons or that's not a thing. Summoning demons is not a thing. It's, I can't believe you did this. How could you be so stupid? So clearly there's some kind of knowledge of demons in this world. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, sure. So, okay. So Lazarus, I decided to add because, yes, the story would still, have the same themes and whatnot if I had just had her drag in a random friend or just a random bystander.
Right.
But it doesn't hit the same way as just being I panicked and I summoned a demon rather than being I panicked, I invited a stranger. It's not the same. You have
That's
to have
true.
That dramatic theory, just yep. Throwing some salt into the flame. I mentioned before that I had two older stories prior to Brimstone Roses that never took off, most because I only made one of them and that was only kind of, but they were both very high fantasy, or one of them was super high fantasy, and I really like fantasy aspects. So being able to put in a demon character was just me treating myself, essentially, because I really like demons and elves and fairies and that kind of stuff. It's my favorite thing to draw. So being able to create a parallel world to what is essentially just our world, but it's filled with demons and supernatural beings, it was a nice treat for myself.
Gotcha.
And hopefully for my readers.
And so is it just general knowledge in the world that B lives in that, demons exist?
Yeah. So on that, I noticed that a lot of, supernatural stories, a lot of times they're just oh, we can't talk about it just because we can't. No reason. Just we can't. And I'm just well, if this kind of stuff is, known in the world, but just everyone's too scared to talk about it, one purpose could be that, it's illegal. And I think it makes sense because something that I was a little surprised about in my comments during that episode was that a lot of people were just why is it illegal? That's stupid. Why would it be illegal? And my question is, why would it not be illegal?
Yeah, it's super dangerous.
It's super dangerous. It's very self-destructive it's self-destructive to the person who summoned it, but also to other people because demons can influence other people. And it's just a bad idea all around. I have had some people ask me on my social media more about it. And I'm just it's kind of heroin, everyone knows about it. You just don't do it. It's
right.
Just not recommended for a multitude of reasons.
Exactly. Well, I thought it was very refreshing that it's, you know, like you mentioned, people know about it. It's not something people are scared to talk about. But you don't talk about it, you don't do it because, yeah, like you said, it's dangerous. It's just not a good
thing. And like, originally, B's sister was going to be a lawyer that specialized in these kinds of cases. And then I was like, wow, I don't know enough legalese to pull that off. So I scrapped that idea, especially because then I was worried that it would make Sophia a little bit too important, right, like, of a character. And I wanted to just keep the story pretty simple because, you know, I want Brimstone and Roses to just get finished. I don't want it to be super dragged out. I want it to be a project that I can actually close.
Gotcha.
Which hasn't been something I can do in the past. So hopefully, now that I know that so many people are like interested and just don't really seem to, I don't know, I guess consider why it wouldn't be illegal, I think that I probably will do a little bit more world building. I had some plan, but I think I need to expand a little bit more now that I've realized it's like captured so many people's interest. But yeah, it's something that I had always planned, but it's not something that I realized would need to be expanded upon, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think, again, it's because so many stories take the other route where it's not a known thing in the world. And, you know, you spend 4 or 5 episodes, you spend this chunk of the story having one character try to convince another. And that's old at this point. It's tired. Yeah. So I'm glad you didn't go that way. The other thing is that's interesting about it is, you know, you mentioned earlier about wanting to tell a story that's about somebody kind of finding their way and, you know, growing as a person and discovering who they are. And obviously right away with the title, Brimstone and Roses, and then with this crazy act of desperation that Bea undertakes of summoning a demon so she can have a date for a wedding. You know, that stuff all speaks to relationship stuff, like getting over a bad breakup and such. But there's so much more to the story that has been laid out as well, with Bea's talk of, you know, moving to the big city. She's mentioned, you know, kind of thinking maybe that she would be able to find the job of her dreams, you know, after going to culinary school and ends up working in this little bakery where she got the job as a favor even. So there's so much more to this story than just exploring their relationships. But exploring a relationship is kind of the foundation. Can you talk to us a little bit about why you built it that way, with that at the center, and then the kind of the rest of Bea's life kind of circling that?
So you know how they always say to write stories that you yourself are interested in?
Right.
Okay, bear with me here, but I really like the trope of enemies to friends to lovers. Mm. The problem with that trope, though, is that it's very drawn out and you need stuff to happen or else it's boring. Like, no one cares. So at the time, whenever I wrote Brimstone, like made the very first outline of it after my class picked the hook, I was still in college. I was away from home. I didn't know what I was going to do when I graduated. It was very stressful for me. So I guess it was a little bit cathartic, I guess, to write out the story and have like essentially a fictional character's life planned out before mine, so that I didn't have to think about what the hell I was going to do. So I started off with just the trope of enemies to friends to lovers. And then I started to build around this idea of being like, well, it's a really difficult, you know, transition from being at college or being in high school even, and then having to just like go out of state for college or, you know, moving for a job, and just like that complete independence and being alone and learning to just like be able to support yourself emotionally, financially, and just, you know, getting adjusted to living alone without a safety net in the form of like parents or friends or family.
So really what
go on.
No, go ahead. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, no, you're fine. I think that I was kind of starting to just like drag on that thought for a moment. Yeah, I'm so sorry. What were you saying?
So I was going to say it's very much drawing, sounds like, from real life experience, but it's also about that idea of becoming like a person, or you know, when you're in college and you think about, okay, now that I'm done and I'm, you know, away from my parents, I'm away from that safety net, as you put it, now you start like checking off the boxes of what's expected of you, right? Like, so, okay, I went to college, I graduated, now I'm supposed to like have a meaningful relationship and get a job and buy a house and those kind of things. So I find that so interesting. It's, in a way, it's a little bit of an old-fashioned idea, and I think society today, especially with the millennial generation, has gotten away from a lot of that traditional stuff, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But there's still a lot of roots of that, for sure. And it's an interesting perspective to take, right? Because B is in the midst of that, and it's clear, you know, especially coming from Hispanic heritage, that her parents, that's what they're expecting for her. And you have the chance to totally flip it on its ear with the way you're telling a story, or you can go traditional and we can have the happy ending. So do you know how it's all gonna turn out? Like, you have the ending in mind, and how long do you think the story might last?
So the entire story is completely written, not like, you know, each detail for detail, but like the outline, each arc, each character that's going to appear, all of the foreshadowing elements have been added in. There's quite a few actually by this point. So like everything's planned. I have the ending in mind. It's going to be a roller coaster of emotions on everyone's end. All the characters, and hopefully my readers too, if I'm doing my job right in terms of the emotional, I guess, arcs of the story. I won't say it too much because I just don't want to give too much away.
Fair enough, yeah.
But as you know, you pointed out, Bea's experience is kind of drawing my own, but then it's also pulling from the experiences of my peers and then of my own family. And just like, yeah, she's kind of just supposed to be almost like a placeholder for anyone else who's in the same situation where, you know what's expected of you, but then things are just falling apart and then you just feel alone and now you're not really sure what to do.
Yeah. The other thing I found interesting, I don't know if this is just, having younger siblings and identifying with Sophia, but B is not always that likable. Sometimes she can come across as a little like, self-absorbed, I guess you'd say. Like, she's, you know, crazy that she, you know, summons this demon. It's like, get over it. Like, are you really that worried? And, you know, she just seems to be a bit of a mess. And so it's like, I was finding times where I was much more on Bradley's side of things when he was giving her a bad time. I was like, yeah, Bradley, stick it to her. But I mean, obviously you have to balance the realism of the character with the likability. So I'm sure there's plenty of people that I identify with B. Maybe it just comes down to where you're at in your life. Like, I'm so far past finding my place in the world, so to speak, where B's at right now. So I'm curious about that, what you have to say about balancing the realism of where B's at as a character with the likability. And then kind of as a follow-up, what's kind of been the reaction of the readership to B in that respect?
Yeah. So B's personality, I wanted her to have a strong personality. I knew that from the bat. I don't really like meek protagonists. I find them more irritating than like overly aggressive protagonists. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that's just also like me as a person. So whenever this, like, we first start off the story, V is not at the lowest of her lows, but she's getting down there. She's like getting towards the very bottom of the barrel. And she's super stressed because it's like her sister's wedding. She doesn't know what to do. And then this will be touched on more, but like her parents they kind of mentioned it in their like brief conversation, but there's like a lot of doubt and all those expectations, you know, settled upon her. And then, so she's very much stressed out. There's just a lot going on. And as a result, it makes her lash out. It makes her very anxious. It makes her kind of just panic. And another thing though, is that also Lazarus is a demon. Demons haven't been explained very well in my story yet. But at the end of the day, they're still demons. They are still damned souls. So she also, so like, yes, she's being a jerk in the beginning, but also, they're, you know, they're demons. They're kind of assholes, just to start with. But that being said, yeah, it's kind of hard because she has a strong personality. She's got a lot going on, and she's not in a good place, which means she's very likely to lash out, and she's got a lot of anxieties, and now she has essentially a leash living with her, which makes it even worse because Bradley is, as you mentioned, a much more likable character to begin with. He's a lot of fun. He's really fun to write. He's very, he's kind of almost sleazy, but he's very charming, and he's just, you know, he's a fun character. So to have it balance out with, you know, the person who is kind of stuck with him, whether she likes it or not, it doesn't make her very likable, and I knew that was going to happen, but I also hope that people would be able to, like, understand her position better. But because the story is still very much in its, like, early phases, and she's starting to get some development now that we're on episode 16, but she still has a long way to go, and I hope that people will continue to just, like, you know, give her a break. If you don't stay for her, then at least stay for Lazarus. He'll always be whatever the hell he is at this point. But yeah, readers, it's, as you said, some people, I think it really does depend on like where you are in life. A lot of younger, not younger, but like a lot of people who are more around my age and then a little bit younger, like in high school and stuff, I've noticed tend to like her or tend to relate. Like at the very least though, they understand where she's coming from, especially people who have like anxiety disorders or depression. They can understand like, yes, they're really bad decisions and she is being a bit insufferable, but I understand that spiral, you know?
Yeah.
But then like, yeah, there's, of course, there's a lot of people who, I swear, we're like on episode 16 now, and I still see comments where people are just like, wow, I can't stand this. Can anyone else not stand the main character? It's just like, please look in the comments first. Yes, there's a lot of people who still don't really like B, and I hope that that will change as she starts to develop.
Yeah,
because it's still like in the baby stages.
Yeah, I think for me it is already started to change. It's like you said, it's so fun to root for Lazarus or Bradley, relate to him. You know, he's snarky and he's making the funny comments and such. And he also at one point at the wedding kind of, you know, calls B on her crap. You know, which you can kind of. He doesn't do it in a nice way, probably not the best way to do it, but you know, again, he's a demon, but you can at least respect him. Like, he's telling her like it is, and maybe she needs somebody to do that. But as the story went on, especially the last couple episodes, Bradley starts doing stuff where it's like, all right, now I can see that you're a bad guy. You know, you're stepping over the line. And I get it. I get why he's doing it. And I think you're going to explore that. Cause you know, he wants to stay as long as he can. So he's got to, you know, prevent certain things from happening. But I'm definitely coming around on B. So I think you're doing a good job. And ultimately, when you're telling a story like this, it's about taking the character on a journey. And we certainly want to see growth out of B. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Lazarus is – he is a fun character, but his intentions have always been stated from the beginning, which is that he wants a place to stay. But now it's kind of, you know, he was relaxed because it wasn't, you know, B wasn't really able to do anything. But now that she's like, all right, it's time to stop moping. I have to do something about this. This cannot be happening. Then he's like, you know, it's not that he's showing his true colors necessarily, because I feel like his true colors were shown in the first arc during the wedding, whenever he like went and apologized to her. But he's starting to like also just show, you know, just because he's a more likable character, it doesn't mean that he's a better character morally speaking, you know?
Yeah, he's sort of has to be. He has to take action now, like you said. You know, before he could just kind of skate by, and now it's like his hand has been forced, and we're seeing him like actually have to be a bad guy, which he always was to begin with, most likely.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, I always feel like there's a difference between an antagonist and a villain, and I would definitely label him as the antagonist, not necessarily the villain.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. When you talk a little bit about the challenges of creating the strip, you mentioned in the past just having that challenge of starting something and finishing it. Is that your biggest challenge that you feel with the strip, or was there something else that was an obstacle you had to overcome to get it on Webtoon?
Yeah, it's mostly just, you know, following through. Starting's really hard, but it's way easier than finishing. Whenever I was first considering publishing on Webtoon, I started thinking about it like a month prior to actually publishing. And then I never did, just because I was just like, oh, well, I don't know the format, or I don't know how to cut up the episodes, or, oh, well, you know, I haven't written the entire story, so I should probably wait until I do that. And just, you know, constantly making up these excuses, and then just being like, oh, well, I'm busy with college work, so I can't worry about that. And so finally, I just, like, one day I sat down and I was like, okay, the competition is soon. Webtoon had a contest in 2018, and I wanted to enter it. And I was like, the contest is starting soon. I need to figure stuff out. So I actually sent a message to the creator of Gourmet Hound on Tumblr. And I was just like, hey, so I'm considering making a comic on Webtoon. I was just curious, can you please tell me, like, just everything you know, please, baby? And she was very sweet, and she did respond. And she, like, listed out all this great information. Like, after reading that and, like, finding out the format and the dimensions and whatnot, I was like, you know what? Yeah, I can do this. I have this information. It's time to stop making up all these excuses. So I took everything that Lihama told me, and then I like sat down and I made the first episode of a series that I ended up scrapping. And then I made Brimstone and Roses right after I finished that first panel or that first episode of a different series.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great strip too. Lihama has been on a previous episode of Webtoon Wednesday. So yeah, great strip.
Yeah, I've listened to this podcast. I really adore it. It's really nice to hear like insight from other creators.
Awesome. That's so great. You're making me blush here.
Yeah, I listen to it while I work, actually. Right whenever I got the email to possibly interview, I like messaged Miranda and I was just like, okay, Miranda, listen, I'm very nervous right now. Like, what was your interview like? Could you tell me just a little? And she's like, oh, it's fine. Jay's super nice. Don't worry about it. And I'm like, okay, good, good. And she was right. You know, it's not that bad. And you're super nice. And I appreciate it.
Great. Well, let's shift gears. You know, you mentioned your work previously as an artist and always being creative. Tell us about your development of the strip visually as you were creating the characters and creating the world.
Oh man, my process is such a mess. So as I mentioned, this was all for a class. It was actually a script writing class for my sequential major. And the final project was that we were supposed to develop a pitch packet as if we were actually going to like, you know, pitch this to editors and like try to get it made into an actual comic. And so Brimstone and Rose is what I went with. I made like 3 character sheets. I had the entire synopsis written, and I don't think I made any actual like pages or anything, because we didn't have to do that, but I wrote out the like a 6-page script, I believe, and it was essentially the entire wedding arc. But it was like cut down so that it would fit on all the pages. Whenever I was developing B and Lazarus, some of their design pieces, especially Lazarus, were a lot more complex. And then I was just like, I'm going to be drawing this guy a lot. Like, I should probably simplify it. So he was cut down on his, like, mostly his outfit. But also just like a few aspects, like his hair, I wasn't very comfortable with drawing. And so I just made it something simpler, but mostly I just actually designed them together. So their designs are supposed to complement each other. B is very soft and round. Her palette is exclusively reds, reds and whites. And like, she's not the only character with blue eyes, but she's got the brightest. I make sure of that. And then Lazarus is obviously very pointy. He's very beanpole-y, I guess. And he's blues and greens and blacks. And he's also the only character in the script who has green eyes. Or sorry, in the story, who has green eyes. Because it's not as obvious as in like stories like Lore Olympus, but I do try to keep a sort of like color theory going on in my comic. Anytime that there's any demonic stuff or anything relating to Lazarus, there's going to be green somewhere, assuming it's not like a tree or something, but you know what I mean? It's green is just supposed to represent him.
Right.
And for B, it's red. And then Amira, she's not shown up that much, but purple was her assigned color. So whenever I like create these characters, I try to like stick them to certain palettes. Sophia also like wears primarily reds and yellows and like warm colors. And there is I just mentioned the pitch packet and I said that I made three character sheets. The third main character hasn't actually been introduced yet. They're coming, but their colors are yellow and black. So like, yeah, just, I have a plan in my head, but I don't know if anyone else has caught on yet. And that's fine. But, you know, I'd like to think that eventually it'll pay off.
I definitely noticed that there was always green around when Lazarus was on the page. So, and I also noticed the red with B and the little cherries. She likes the little, you know, two cherries. I think she had it on a shirt and it's on her cell phone cover. So I noticed there were some themes running through. So at least somebody's noticing your hard work.
I appreciate it. I'm very glad to hear that. Yeah, there's really no meaning for the cherries. I just think they're cute. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, it doesn't always have to
be. But the colors are intentional. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't always have to have a special meaning, but it's just cool. I just figured out that's just what, you know, what she likes. But when you were developing the color palette and such for the characters and their designs, you mentioned how Lazarus and B complement each other. One's, you know, more rounded, the other one's super angular. Did all that stuff come relatively easy for you, or did you have to work at it for a while and refine and try different ideas?
This is going to sound super bad, but I really don't tend to make many drafts of characters. I'll like draw them once and then I'm just like, okay, we're going with that. I don't care. So B is actually a recycled character of mine. I had actually already designed her. She was originally a tiefling I was going to play in a D&D campaign. Mm. And so I ended up taking that character and just making her human and making her slightly less badass, quite frankly. She's not quite as badass as her original iteration. But in terms of drawing just like a rounder character, like a softer character, that was actually pretty hard for me. I normally draw muscular characters, or like very, I don't want to say twink, but I'm saying that I draw a lot of twinks. And so it was a little difficult to draw, you know, a plus size character, but it was something that I needed to do as an artist. It's something that, you know, it's actually a problem that I'm facing right now because I need to find some line assistance and I'm a bit worried that having a plus size character might cause problems and finding people who can like draw them accurately and respectfully. Lazarus was easy. He was just like, that's just essentially how I draw a standard man.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting challenge. I never thought about that. Because again, like you're saying, this is such a representative story, and unfortunately, you know, most comics you're not gonna see that. So yeah, I could see that being a challenge. One other thing I wanted to talk about as far as the visuals is your color work. You know, we mentioned some pretty heavy topics that we're talking about here, you know, trying to find your place in the world and get a job and relationships and expectations. And then you throw in the supernatural and demons and, you know, you could have gone very, very dark. You could have gone down a different path and the story could have had a much different tone. But instead, despite all the obstacles and challenges B's facing, it comes across as a sort of a positive strip. Like it, just the look of it, it's very bright, and it just it's uplifting in a way. And I think a lot of that has to do with the color work. So that must have been intentional on your part. Can you talk a little bit about that, and then just how you made the choice to you know, go light with the colors, but then also about your process. I mean, you're talking about doing all this work yourself, and I it's a lot, I know, because you're talking about line work, but also doing color work. Was color and painting and that always an interest of yours as well?
Oh, man. So the colors aren't completely intentional. I obviously have a lot of drawing experience and whatnot, and I just tend to naturally use more vibrant colors. I just think it's visually appealing. But I think it also can be seen that, like, I decided to make Brimstone Roses whenever I entered the contest. I actually had it put in as a comedy rather than a romance, which is what it's listed now, because yes, romance is important to the story, but I like to think that the journey there is more important than the relationship. And so the reason I use bright colors besides it just being, you know, visually appealing, I guess it's because, like, even though it's dark themes and stuff, there's always time to, like, pick yourself up and just keep moving forward. It's gonna, like, it sucks right now, but eventually it won't suck and it'll be okay. There's still time, you know? No matter, like, how far down in the drain you are, you still have time to, like, climb back up. And sometimes I mentioned kind of dabbling in color theory. A lot of the times whenever B is, like, upset, or, like, well, just any character is, like, upset, the background, because I use a lot of, like, block filter backgrounds just because it saves time. And sometimes it's also more important to focus on the expressions. But I use purples whenever they're upset or they're, like, depressed or they're anxious. Or if they're angry, I use red, which is kind of obvious. Like, I use for, like, romantic interest, I use pinks. And then, like, happiness or surprise, I usually use, like, yellow. And it's just, it's visually appealing, but it's also just because, you know, color psychology helps a lot with, like, conveying certain moods. In more recent episodes, I've been a bit more conscious of, like, trying to dull down some colors just because, you know, again, she's in a very difficult place, but also because I use so many bright colors, it's really hard to build values. Mm. A lot of them are very high in, like, light shades. And there's really no other reason than that than I was just like, this looks nice and it's warm colors and that fits B.
All right, fair enough. Well, being that you are so interested in color theory and each character kind of has their own color palette, it's clear you've put a lot of thought into it. And, you know, I hope that more readers appreciate, you know, they listen to this and they appreciate and start to notice, because it is something that I noticed. And the color work is really fantastic. I don't know that it needs to be.
Oh, I'm really happy to hear that.
I don't know that it needs to be toned down. Like, I get it, and I'm certainly not telling you how to create your strip, but I like that there's a little bit of that juxtaposition, because you just get the impression that regardless of all of these obstacles that Bee's facing in her life, she at the core is a good-hearted person. And I think that the color palette that you've chosen and the way you're you know, portraying the world with color kind of brings that through. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm happy to hear that. It's more just like something where I've, you know, as I've been working, I'm just like, you know, this would probably be a lot easier for you to shade if you had chosen a different palette right. with, like, different values. But, you know, if it's working, then I'm really happy to know that. I'm relieved, because that's going to be way less stressful on me in the future.
Yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, I'm digging it. So, yeah, I mentioned that you're doing all the work yourself, so I know the deadline's ever looming. I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I did want to get your thoughts on the Webtoon platform as a whole. You know, I think you're a great person to speak to Webtoon as a platform overall, especially being that this is your first real big project that's been out there in front of a lot of people's eyes. So give us your thoughts on Webtoon as a platform.
Yeah, so I hadn't heard about Webtoon until a friend brought it up to me during the summer contest in 2018. At the time, I really only knew of SmackG's as a comic, you know, hosting platform. And even then, even way back whenever I was trying to work on Wheat Bread, it was a very, like, kind of clunky website, quite frankly. I don't want to trash on it or anything, because it was still, you know, great for creators trying to get out there and find a simple way to, like, create a page and start to, you know, upload their work and with like descriptions and like a follower base. Webtoon was very surprising to me because it was already like a very clean UI. It had all these comics up. It was specifically for comics. There wasn't like a crap load of ads just everywhere. And most importantly, though, it already had a very large viewer base. And I think Webtoon is really unique in that. I mean, after I looked at Webtoon, I obviously heard about Tapas and Hiveworks. And as I left SCAD, so for the sequential department, they usually bring in comic editors. And then we, like us, the students, we get to meet with these editors, start portfolios, all that. And as I was leaving SCAD, they actually started doing an online editor's day. And the companies that they invited were, it was Hiveworks, it was Webtoon, and I think they invited First, Second, I can't quite remember the third company. But, you know, I was already signed with Webtoon by the time that that happened, but, you know, to just see this platform growing so quickly, it was really impressive. And I currently have several friends who are at SCAD, who are also publishing on Canvas now. Partially because I was just like, hey, you guys should really publish here. It's really great. There's already an audience there. It's got a nice sorting function. You'll get eyes on your stuff. It's great. You guys should check it out. Totally not chilling because I work there.
It's true, though. It's one of the best things about Webtoon is that you know that if you're on the site, people are going there looking for comics to read.
And they do a really good job advertising, too. Like, they're very well put together. And it's, you know, it was, I wasn't super into comics. And so, like, finding that this company is so like, well put together. And so, I don't want to say, like, in with the kids, but, like, they know which platforms to advertise on. And they, like, they know how to market comics to be appealing to younger readers. They have a lot of ads on Instagram. So I'm always stunned by the sheer amount of people who read Webtoon, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And the other thing that comes along with that of having the big base of readers who go there to read both their usual strips, but they're always looking for new stuff to check out. And then with that comes a chance to build a community of your own fans and your own readers that, you know, are anxiously awaiting your latest episode. And then it I was just going to say it starts to build your own community in the comment sections at the end of the strip. So how has the reception been for you, and how is that community building going for Brimstone and Roses?
So, as I was working on Brimstone Roses in college, Good Omens recently sprung up into, you know, social media stuff, and it started gaining popularity. And I really like drawing fan art. It's my favorite thing to do. And I swear this is going somewhere, but I was creating a lot of fan content for Good Omens. And as a result, I built a very large following a pretty large following from like creating all this fan content. And as I got that following, after I launched Brimstone and Roses, I picked them up and I was just like, please look at this. And I just threw them at my original content. And I was like, please look at this. It's got a demon too. See, look, similarities. Please like it. And so a lot of support that I get on social media is from fans that I have collected, I guess, for lack of a better word, like people that I have garnered into my social medias and then forced into my original content. And awesome. So, sorry?
No, I just said that's awesome.
Yeah, it's been something else, I'll tell you that. Sometimes, you know, whenever you draw a lot of fan content and then that fan content stops and you're just like, please look at this original content, sometimes people can be a little bit upset about that. They don't really appreciate that some people need to earn a living, unfortunately. A lot of my initial, like, hype, I guess, for the series, besides the Discover audience, Canvas audience, was actually people who originally followed me for fan art. And then after I created this original content, they were just like, this is really cool. You know, I think I'm glad that you're starting to work on your own stuff. We're going to support you through this. And it's been really nice to have this, like, backing whenever I was honestly just really stressed out that, like, once I stopped producing a bunch of fan content, people would just be like, okay, bye, I don't care anymore.
Right.
And some people have been like that. But for the most part, you know, the community that has started to form around Brimstone and Roses has been very, very sweet and very supportive. I recently just, like, opened up invite links to my Discord for the comic, and they went pretty quick. I was a bit surprised. And it's just, it's very surprising, you know, to, like, create something original and then have people be interested in it. And I know that sounds really sad, but I just remember, like, sitting there and just being like, oh, wow, like, people actually care about the story I'm writing. Wow, this is very strange.
Yeah, you never know how it's going to be received. There's always that apprehension that maybe people aren't going to get it or they're just not going to like it.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, whenever the comic first launched, as you mentioned, there's a lot of just casual diversity in it, and it really made some people mad. And so some of the, like, pushback was a bit disheartening, and it was hard to, like, stay motivated and to, like, tell myself that, you know, I made the right decision in writing this story and writing these characters. But then, like, I ended up kind of mentioning a little bit on social media, and then I just got, like, immediately just, like, a swell of support and, like, online hugs, I guess, of people being like, no, I like what you're making. I am really glad to see characters that I can relate to or that are different in, like, you know, on, you know, in media that I'm consuming. And so it, like, it's, you know, it's helped with, you know, my anxieties and my concerns about writing the story and working on it. I am finally on break now, from working on Brimstone and Roses. But yeah, I just, like, I got very burnt out with, like, the negativity whenever I launched. And now I'm just, like, kind of recuperating and surrounding myself in, like, the positivity that my newly created community is offering me, which is really nice.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're embracing the positive. I mean, it's so hard because a lot of times the negative voices can be louder, you know, even if they're the minority. You know, you have maybe a lot of people that don't like it, but they're just so loud. And it's sometimes, I know as a creator, you can get focused on that instead of on all the, you know, the 95 other people that love it. You know, if 95 people out of 100 love it, you're doing a great job. So I love the strip. Keep doing it. Congratulations on your success. I look forward to reading more.
Yeah, thanks so much.
B and Lazarus. And as we sort of close up here, I want to give the floor to you. If there's anything you want to say to your fans or listeners or anybody who's listening who hasn't had a chance to check it out, anything you want to share with us?
If you're considering making your own webtoon, just make the first episode at the very least and post it, because you will find a community. And webtoon is just such a great platform, and it's just growing every day, you know? And that, I just hope that people will enjoy Brimstone Roses as it continues to develop. Very proud of the episode I just put out, just finished making.
Awesome. Can't wait to check it out. Well, you mentioned you're pretty active on social media, May, so where's the best place for people to follow you and interact with you there?
I'm active across all social medias, but I'm, like, I will probably respond to you more likely on Tumblr or Twitter, but on all social medias except for frickin' Instagram, because for some reason the name's taken. I'm Spearmint, S-P-E-R-E-M-I-N-T. And on Instagram, it's just Spearmint, but with an S at the end, because I don't know why, but the name is taken. But it's not. There's no account. Instagram, please answer my emails. It's so frustrating.
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, I'll put links to May's social media in the show notes, everybody. So if you're having trouble finding her, you can go look for those links there and give her a follow. So again, May, congratulations on the success of the series. It's a whole lot of fun, and thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Jace. It was awesome to, you know, be able to talk about it.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.